Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Nick Redfern is back. He's the author of more than 60 books, UFOs, Bigfoot. He's no stranger to conspiracies. This time he's got a good one, The Diary of Secrets, UFO Conspiracies, and the Mysterious Death of Marilyn Monroe.
They didn't realize until it was almost too late that Marilyn had put down in paper all of these secrets, and which made her effectively sort of a national security issue.
Diary of Secrets, UFO Conspiracies, and the Mysterious Death of Marilyn Monroe. Anybody who's curious about what really happened with the Kennedys and Marilyn Monroe and how UFOs, ETs, that kind of stuff factors in, also the CIA, well, Nick was curious too. Is this like a labor of love?
Well, I guess in some ways it was because, or it still is, I suppose. I guess primarily because, you know, when you're talking about things like Bigfoot and you're talking about UFOs, it's in some respect, it's sort of very kind of detached, you know. But when you're talking about, you know, real people, names, families, tragedies, things like that, it becomes more than just, you know, an investigation into a mystery, you know, you're talking about lives and things like that. So, yeah, in some respects, you know, it is kind of different to many of the other books I've written over the years.
Marilyn Monroe supposedly committed suicide. So why don't you give us the backstory?
Right. Well, what we know for sure is that Marilyn died in August 1962 and under very controversial circumstances. She was in a situation where essentially her life was in danger prior to that time. And it all goes back to earlier in 1962. And that was when Marilyn was introduced to both John F. Kennedy, the president at the time, and Robert Kennedy, who was the attorney general at the same time as well. We know for sure that she'd had sort of brief affairs with both of them. However, the things that made everything go turn up upside down for Marilyn was the fact that to sort of impress Marilyn into the bedroom, so to speak, both of them shared with them or gave her information on a number of US government secrets, like, for example, plans to attack Cuba and to assassinate Fidel Castro and do deals with the mafia and the mob, things like that. And of course, by doing that, it really did put Marilyn's life, if you like, you know, on an edge. And it wasn't long after that she started to, she put together this sort of what she called her Diary of Secrets. And this wasn't, you know, your average diary. It wasn't like, dear diary, I went to the park today and fed the dogs or anything like that. This was a diary where everything that the Kennedys told her, she put it in this voluminous diary that she'd already got. And they didn't realize until it was almost too late that Marilyn had put down in paper all of these secrets, and which made her effectively sort of a national security issue. It was not long after that she was found dead in her home. And that's how, you know, she became in this very precarious situation, and how she also learned of all these government secrets. And then you've got the most sort of astounding secret of all, namely that the Kennedy supposedly informed her of what they knew about crashed UFOs and dead aliens, Roswell, things like that. Supposedly there were people deep in the intelligence community who said, this woman's got to go because she's essentially knows all of our secrets. That's how the story began. And these rumors have been going around for a long, long time. But the story started to break for the first time in 1995 when a document purported to be a real CIA document was leaked into the UFO research community. And that's really how the whole thing started to take off. It's a one-page document, and it has the CIA logo at the top. What we do know is the document, it has the right typeface and the type of typewriter for that era, the 1950s through to the early 1960s. So we know that if the document is real or isn't, we know for sure it was put together by someone who had access to at least two 1950s era typewriters. We know the font that the CIA used was also used in this document. So, you know, you can make a good, strong case that this is a real document. It's a one-page document, but it covers a lot of ground. And it talks about how two people, one of them Dorothy Kilgallen, and the other one a man named Howard Rothberg. Now, they were both friends with each other, and Marilyn knew Dorothy Kilgallen, who was a noted journalist in the 1960s, and she died under mysterious circumstances while she was investigating the JFK assassination in the 1960s. She was found dead in 1965. And the document talks about how the CIA, you know, sort of tapped into both Rothberg and Kilgallen's telephones at home and were listening to all of the conversations between Dorothy Kilgallen and Howard Rothberg, and Kilgallen knew Marilyn. And the CIA, according to the document, became very, very concerned that not only had Marilyn been told this story by the Kennedy brothers about all this, but it was now getting to Dorothy Kilgallen, who then shared it with Howard Rothberg, who was sort of like a celebrity guy around town who did work at sort of renovation works on old homes and things like that. And he knew a lot of celebrities in New York as well. So the CIA was getting very, very concerned the story of Marilyn and UFOs as it relates in this document was getting bigger and bigger, and more people within this sort of group of people in New York, but also in Hollywood as well, because, you know, Marilyn, that's primarily where she worked. The document talks about how Kilgallen needs to be watched and kept very carefully, and we need to continue to listen in on her phone calls. So in other words, the document talks about how the CIA was listening to just about everything that all of these people were saying. Where did this document come from? It was handed over in 1995 to a man named Milo Spiriglio. Now, Milo Spiriglio was an author, like an investigative writer, but he was also somebody who worked as a private detective, and he wrote three books on Marilyn's death, all from the perspective of her death having been very mysterious and dubious. And the document was handed over to Spiriglio by a UFO researcher named Timothy Cooper. And Cooper said that he got this document from an elderly archivist in the CIA. In other words, a retired elderly man who back in the 50s and 60s worked in the CIA. And upon his retirement, he managed to essentially steal the document and take it out of the CIA. It was kind of like a parallel with the whole situation, you know, where somebody, situation that, you know, that the person wanted to sort of put something out there mm-hmm. as a means to tell this story now that he was retired. So we've got this elderly CIA guy who decides to hand over the documents to Timothy Cooper, UFO researcher. Cooper then hands it over to Spiriglio, who wrote several books on Marilyn. One of them was a bestseller, The Marilyn Monroe Conspiracy. The story from there started to grow and grow for a few years. But then for reasons that nobody's really sort of sure why, the story started to stall. So a few years ago, I thought, well, why don't I sort of go back and, you know, go back to the 90s, 1990s, so to speak, and bring things right up to the present day and see if I could find any more material, because so much of the story had gone into a sort of a state of limbo.
KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House, Nick Redfern, connecting the dots between Marilyn Monroe, the Kennedys, and aliens, or UFOs.
He was contacted by several elderly whistleblowers who essentially stole a bunch of material, supposedly, from various government agencies, all to do with crashed UFOs, dead aliens, alien autopsies, things like this.
Diary of Secrets, UFO Conspiracies, and the Mysterious Death of Marilyn Monroe. Nick Redfern.
It then became sort of my diary as well. You know, Marilyn had done sort of a diary type book, collecting all this material that the Kennedys gave her. But also, when I started to get into this, you know, it became almost like a diary for me when I started to go around the country tracking down various elderly people who'd worked in the intelligence community to try and get as much material as I could. And that's basically what I did. You know, the story began in 1995 with this leaked document, kind of like an Edward Snowden type situation, you know, when Snowden stole all those documents and handed them over to the media. It was kind of like that situation, but just with this one page document, but as I said, like a quite extensively detailed, contact and in the document itself, and that's what I did. You know, sort of, I gave it a kickstart again, if you like. You know, the story, and to my surprise, you know, good surprise, I was able to track down a number of, again, old timers who back then were sort of in their 30s working in the intelligence community, and now in their sort of, you know, 90s now, or in the late 80s. And I started to get corroborative data, which made me to believe that this document had probably been put into the public domain deliberately to get this story out there.
Did you get any more information from Timothy Cooper?
Timothy Cooper was someone who, he was almost in sort of a unique situation because he was someone who did a lot of UFO research, but he was contacted in the start of the 1990s. He was contacted by several elderly whistleblowers who essentially stole a bunch of material, supposedly, from various government agencies, all to do with crashed UFOs, dead aliens, alien autopsies, things like this. And over the years, Cooper would have these elderly, long-retired characters bring him more and more documents. And they painted this picture of sort of almost like a spin-off of the real government. You know, you've got another government that most people in government didn't know anything about, you know, sort of what they call black projects, where most people in government, and sometimes even within the White House, you know, they don't even know what's going on, you know, and it's the concept of what's known as need to know.
Yeah.
And if you don't need to know, you aren't told, you know. and that actually even does relate to, you know, people as high as like the White House, you know, if they're not needed to be told, well, they don't know. And of course, even with the president, sometimes they're only in for 4 years, so even they aren't given all the answers. But Cooper was sort of getting more and more documents from this sort of offshoot of the regular government, so to speak. Okay. And the figures for those documents eventually, I mean, it literally related to hundreds and hundreds of pages. And the one primary reason why I don't believe these documents were hoaxes was simply because these documents were written collectively in round about 15, 16 different typewriters, all from the 1940s through to the 1960s. And not only would it be very difficult for the average person to get 16 different types of typewriters with sort of 16 different types and fonts, you know, with the type in, etc. And so to get all of this and put it all together and collect all of, you know, all these old typewriters and all the the ribbons and everything else would be, you know, a big challenge for someone to do that. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, an important thing to note. And that, again, was one of the things that, you know, I felt I was impressed by. And one of the things I found, which no one else had seen at all, was that I used the Freedom of Information Act to see if there was anything I could find that would sort of corroborate this leaked stolen document. And to my surprise, I found that there actually was some corroborating information, namely that the CIA had actually carefully and quietly opened a file on Milo Spiriglio, the guy who had written these three books on Marilyn. And he was the one who the document was handed over to. And the CIA then opened a file on Spiriglio. So this makes it very clear that the CIA had a very deep concern about who Spiriglio was talking to, what his plans were. Was he going to write a book himself about this, you know, the story of Marilyn and the UFOs and the crashed UFOs and the dead aliens. So for the CIA to discreetly open a file on Milo Spiriglio, an author, you know, mm-hmm. it shows how, you know, the extent to which the CIA was keeping a watch on Spiriglio. Now, if the document wasn't real or there were no concerns, there would be no reason to open a file on Spiriglio, you know, when he was given this document. But the fact is, the CIA did open the file, and I was able to get hold of a part of it. I didn't get the whole file, but I got about 25 pages. And those 25 pages were all about how the CIA was keeping a watch on Spiriglio. Every time his name was mentioned in a US newspaper, the CIA would actually photocopy all of the articles and put them in the file. This is sort of like another example of government agencies having concerns about this document circulating around and the Marilyn story getting bigger and bigger.
Okay, Dorothy Kilgallen, did they have a file on her too?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a story all on its own.
Yeah.
Dorothy Kilgallen was a journalist, and she in the 1950s, the 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s, she did a lot of investigative journalistic work. She was actually the first person in the public to see the Warren report on the assassination of President Kennedy in November 63. Kilgallen, she was looking into the whole situation with JFK and was found dead in 1965 under very dubious circumstances in her home.
Nick, those circumstances are extremely coincidental because they also mirror the circumstances that Marilyn was found under. To me, it's like a signature. The setup is really, really similar.
Yes, you're right. You're right. But what's particularly intriguing is that in 1955, Dorothy Kilgallen went on vacation with her husband, husband at the time, for a week in the UK. And she was able to contact a number of people in British intelligence who told her of a story of crashed UFOs, dead aliens, you know, kind of a similar, if not identical, story to, you know, what was coming out of the United States at the same time. But reportedly, Kilgallen discovered this sort of US-UK secret program where the US and the UK were working together to try and understand what these aliens were and what these little bodies were they'd found, things like that.
There's more than one murder mystery here, but we're focusing on Marilyn Monroe. Back with Nick Redfern, Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. So there's more than one murder mystery here, connecting the dots between the Kennedys, Marilyn Monroe, and UFOs. Nick Redfern.
The CIA realizes that somebody has broken the story and shared it with Kilgallen, and then she dies. And then, of course, you know, 63, JFK dies, 68... Robert Kennedy dies. Just about everybody who is in that is mentioned in that document dies young, and that's reflected in the Marilyn documents, the UFO documents as well. So we've got Dorothy Kilgallen hearing the story of the crashed UFOs. She then shares it with her friend Howard Rothberg. And it gets to the CIA. The CIA realizes that somebody has broken the story and shared it with Kilgallen, and then she dies. And then, of course, you know, 63, JFK dies, 68, Robert Kennedy dies. Just about everybody who is in that is mentioned in that document dies young. And it's a really, and just, but also to talk a little, one other thing about Kilgallen, I got an entire FBI surveillance file, which runs to just under 300 pages long.
Wow. And
again, that gives you some idea, you know, of the sheer extent to which people like journalists and particularly investigative journalists like Dorothy Kilgallen, you know, it shows you the sheer extent to which government agencies will open files on people if they feel, you know, there may be, you know, sort of like a national security angle to all of this.
Kind of where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah, exactly. There's both, actually.
Well, Spiriglio, considering what happened to her and then they opened a file on him, apparently he didn't get as close.
Spiriglio died about 12 years ago, and now his circumstances were just, unfortunately, just regular.
Lung cancer.
It was just through health issues. However, the important thing about Spiriglio is the fact that he wrote three very well-received books. You know, they were not sort of like, you know, tabloid-type books. They were, you know, they were very well
researched,
put together. And that's the reason why, you know, he became part of this story. So, you know, you've got all these different characters in the story. You've got Spiriglio writing all these books. And then, you know, you've got Timothy Cooper being given these documents from this elderly guy who worked in the CIA and basically, you know, sort of clandestinely got these documents out of the CIA and other agencies. And then it all sort of mixes in with the Kennedy assassination and Dorothy Kilgallen, who was, you know, in between the two, you know, the UFO angle and the assassination angle as well.
From the people that you spoke to, who do you think had the best information? I mean, the diary doesn't exist anymore. That they got rid of that, right?
Well, yeah. Well, one of the people I interviewed was a man named Dan Salter. And Dan Salter, he's now dead. I interviewed him a number of years ago. And he was not unlike, again, also like an Edward Snowden type guy, except when I interviewed him back then, he was like about 84, 85. he told me a fascinating story about, you know, with Marilyn, obviously, you know, spending most of her time in Hollywood, you know, making movies. But she had a lot of friends, you know, in the Hollywood movie environment. And Salter told me as to how back in the early 1960s, decades before this document ever surfaced, or decades before Timothy Cooper was, you know, when he was still a little kid, that Salter had been told the story of Marilyn having been killed because of what she knew, not just about the UFO stuff, but as I said, you know, things like plans to invade Cuba and kill Castro, work with the mafia, all this kind of stuff. And Salter, a very, you know, sort of respected guy, told me a lot of material about how this story of Marilyn being killed, and that there was a connection, you know, between UFOs, Marilyn, and the Kennedys, and the diary. And Salter went on the record with me saying that, yes, he'd heard this story round about 1963. And, of course, the documents and the story, as far as, you know, up until that point, nobody had ever heard about this till 1995. However, but Salter said, yeah, he said, I can state with certainty that this story was circulating around Hollywood, because Marilyn didn't keep her mouth shut. You know, she opened the story, and it brought her, brought her down, unfortunately. So
You quote him.
So
in
for
the book.
Me, you know, the idea that it's just a hoax, a sophisticated hoax, doesn't really hold the water.
And then I like his license plate.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was a strange part of the story. He had this sort of weird, strange license plate, Salter. It was basically sort of the kind of plate that, like a government plate, and he said that it was, after he retired, it was given to him, and he wondered, he wasn't sure himself why he got it, but he wondered. He wondered if it may have been sort of, you know, somebody was trying to make a statement or helping, you know, us along with the story, that kind of thing.
Tracking him.
Yeah. Yeah.
You wouldn't miss this license plate. HQ Interplanetary Phenomenon Scientific and Technical Counterintelligence, Washington, D.C., or Washington 25, D.C. It's like, okay, that's kind of a mouthful.
Yeah, you're right. But I mean, it's like a lot with these, you know, these elderly whistleblowers. They'll tell you what they want to know, you know, and they'll tell you what they don't want to tell you in case it gets them into sort of significant problems. So, you know, you always have to be careful with the, you know, what they say and what their goal is. You know, what's the purpose? You know, why are they coming forward? That kind of thing. For me, the most important thing that, as I said, that he told me was that when Marilyn, you know, she died August 62, and he said that he heard the story maybe about 6 or 7 months after that, and he said that's when, within the world of celebrities, which at that time, you know, was mixed with politics and things like this, the story soon blended together, you know, and people were starting within Marilyn's inner circle, so to speak, the story was starting to get out. And that's probably why, you know, you've got something like this document expressing concerns that who's telling Marilyn all of this, you know. And then when it turns out, you know, that it was the Kennedys, you know, that's when things really got sort of big time, you know, when all of these secrets have been released by the Kennedys to Marilyn, and they didn't even know that she was putting it in this huge diary that she got. That's when somebody, we don't know who, basically said something along the lines of, you know, she's got to go, otherwise this is just all going to come tumbling out.
The book is Diary of Secrets, UFO Conspiracies, and the Mysterious Death of Marilyn Monroe. Wendy's Coffee House, my guest, Nick Redfern. More than 60 books focused on UFOs, Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, all sorts of Fortean mysteries. And you can follow Nick on his blog, nickredfernfortean.blogspot.com.
A number of people who worked in the morgue at the time came forward and said, yes, we saw this chunky, thick diary, and we realized that it was Marilyn's diary.
Marilyn Monroe, the Kennedys, and aliens.
Uri Geller claims he saw aliens at NASA. So that gets us into the alien UFO thing. And you actually haven't finished your investigation with Marilyn. So are you going to go there too?
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the things I've often found, if you're writing a book, you know, you think you've got everything, but then, you know, like I do a radio show or I do a lecture and somebody comes up to you or give you or emails you and say, hey, you know, I heard your show last night and, you know, my grandfather worked in ABC XYZ and he told me this. So it's inevitable, really, you know, that new material will come forward as time goes along. I mean, you know, I often find that happen. And sometimes, you know, it's happened to where I've been able to do a complete follow-up book. Or on other occasions, you know, there are snippets of data that's still interesting. And so, you know, I can probably turn it into a few articles instead. But yeah, that's one of the good things. You know, you write about something, people know about it, and they approach you. So that's always a good situation.
You think there's some more info in the CIA documents that have yet to be released?
Well, I guess in many respects, it depends how the situation with the documents. I mean, we know for sure that in some cases, in relation to national security, agencies do sometimes shred or burn files that, you know, could be potentially, you know, could cause problems if it got out to the media, you know, the press and there's a big, big situation. And the best thing from their perspective is let's just destroy all these files and then nobody will know what we did, you know.
Yeah.
That does happen. You know, people think that documents are always kept, you know, but if it's something that could have an effect to national security and maybe have an impact on the government and the president, you can easily see how they would say, look, you know, if this ever gets that out, it could be, you know, a major issue. So let's just effectively pretend it didn't exist and just shred it, burn it, do whatever it, but get rid of it. And reportedly, that's what happened with Marilyn's diary. We know for sure that when she died, a lot of her few items, like a handbag and things like that, were actually taken to the morgue when she was taken on the morning of August 3, 1962. And with some of her possessions was the diary. And a number of people who worked in the morgue at the time came forward and said, yes, we saw this chunky, thick diary, and we realized that it was Marilyn's diary. And about 3 days after that, a bunch of guys in suits came in and left with a number of Marilyn's possessions, one of them being the diary. Some people have said, well, do you think the diary was destroyed? Was it burned? Was it, you know, shredded? Or is it still existing somewhere? My personal thought on this is that the document of the diary is probably still around somewhere within, you know, a government vault or something like that. The reason for that, because that diary, we know for sure, contained a massive amount of government secrets, politics, things like this. You know, a lot of people thought Marilyn, you know, she had this sort of image, you know, like sort of a dumb blonde, which she wasn't, you
right,
know, she was
right.
Nothing like that. Some of her movies kind of presented her like that.
Mm-hmm.
However, she was a very, you know, she was someone very much into interesting politics and world stage and things like that. So I think probably they would have kept the diary just in case over the years it needed to be pulled out because there was somebody like me looking into it, you know. Somewhere I would think the diary is still around somewhere. where it is. Probably, you know, I mean, I made a joke the other day when I was doing a show. I said probably like 50 feet under Area 51 or something in a sealed vault. But I mean, that probably, it probably really is, so, you know, in kind of that sort of situation. You know, nobody gets to see Marilyn's diary unless, you know, they really do have the sort of the, you know, the highest ability to access something like that.
But there's an extensive list of the connections that she had. This makes it really convoluted in trying to connect the dots. So I'm sure something is out there that they haven't bothered to get covered up. It's just a matter of who died and buried it, you know?
That is one of the things about the story. It is a complicated story because, you know, you've got these elderly people with their secrets that are hidden, and some of them want to come forward. And then, you know, you've got even one of Marilyn's hairdressers talking about having knowledge of this story and hearing these rumors about Marilyn being told about these strange bodies, little bodies found out in the desert in New Mexico in the 40s, which makes it sound like Roswell, you know. Mm-hmm. And you've got sort of other theories, you know, were the Russians involved putting this document together? Who's killing this person? Who's killing that person? You know,
yeah.
So it's very much, you know, a story that goes far beyond Marilyn being killed because of aliens. You know, that's the simplistic scenario or the story, if you like. You know, it gets into so many different aspects of like espionage,
yes,
and some agencies knowing what this agency's doing and this other agency won't tell the other agency. And before you know it, you know, 10 people have died under mysterious circumstances.
She got a passport to go to Russia. And so with all this information at her disposal and then taking a tour of Russia, connecting with whoever might be tapping her room and all that, I'm sure they were absolutely hysterical over the potential of her letting loose some big secrets.
Yeah. And you put all that together and, you know, you've got a really sort of convoluted you know, strange story that is admittedly, you know, difficult to put together because, you know, it is such a weird story. However, if you're careful and, you know, you put it together from a chronological perspective, then put together all the different people who were working in and out of Hollywood and who's connected with this person, like Dorothy Kilgallen. You know, she wasn't great friends. We weren't big friends with Marilyn Monroe, but they knew each other and they were friendly. The trick really is to put the threads all together, but not just the threads of the events, but the threads of the names. In many respects, but not just with the story, but with the time frame as well. The story is kind of like one of those black and white movies, you know, from the 1950s with, you know, the private detective going after to solve the mystery, that kind of thing. It kind of impacts upon that sort of era, as it would, you know, because we're talking about the 60s. But even the story kind of, you know, sort of plays in on that angle as well.
You have 60 plus books. Men in Black, Women in Black, UFOs, aliens, and then you talk about other resources here on your blog, and that's Nick Redfern for TN Blogspot. What are you working on right now?
Well, I've got a new book coming out September the 1st, and it's called The Time Travel Book, and that's what it's about. It's like an A to Z type book on everything to do with time travel. You know, the physics and the science behind time travel. And then there's a section on time travel in the world of entertainment, you know, like Back to the Future and things like that. Also to go hunting for time travelers who may actually be with us right now, you know,
yes,
sort of blending in with us.
Oh, the poor things. Hey, thank you. The book is fascinating, and again, the cast of characters incredible, and the dots do connect, and it leaves you thinking and knowing there is more to the story. Nick Redfern, and again, you can check him out at Blogspot, and the book Secrets, the UFO Conspiracies and the Mysteries, the Mysterious Death of Marilyn Monroe, and aliens are in there. They are. So is Roswell.
Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio.
Moro Casino. America.
a social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.